The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
It's 1989. A crowd has gathered around a mystic who claims she can see the future. The crowd is silent. All you can hear is the plastic rattle of the woman's bracelets and beads as she gyrates her hands around a crystal ball. In a feather boa headdress, she concentrates her attention, face contorting, her eyes closed.
"Focus," she says.
Heel-clicking slippers that came with an Aladdin costume, the bulbous-necked lady scatters some glittery dirt around the ancient table, stopping halfway to pull another handful out of a purple, satiny Crown Royal satchel with a gold-painted drawstring. Suddenly, she gasps.
I see a spirit.
The crowd, even quieter now.
He's talking to me. You have come from the future with startling news? Concentrate, focus. O.J. Simpson, he'll become a murderer. Bruce Jenner will become the world's first conservative feminist. Michael Jackson, he'll turn into a frail white woman who wanders a circus-like home with chimpanzees and Macaulay Culkin. And I see pudding. I see pudding pops. I see prison bars. Bill Cosby, he will go to prison.
The room immediately bursts into laughter. Too unbelievable! Bill Cosby in prison. America's father. Intelligent. Funny. He's trustworthy. He's America's dad. He warmly invited us into his home, and we invited him into ours. He's an inspiration to everyone, but especially young black children who were able to see a version of themselves that had never existed on TV. The Huxtable family is an emblem of achievement. Teachers followed and showed Fat Albert and the Cosby kids in class.
Ridiculous. I'm telling you, the spirits are telling me.
Apparently, for years, it was another open secret in Hollywood. What a surprise! That Cosby had a darker side. But strangely, Cosby's downfall began at a comedy show with a joke. Google Bill Cosby, rapist, he told the audience. There's more results than Hannibal. You know the rest. Women stepped forward in droves, 58 of them. Their stories were horrifying and hard to believe. The allegations spread across decades, but he denied them. But they kept mounting. Some of them were all too old to take to court, but a handful were not. And as Cosby dodged his lawsuit after lawsuit after lawsuit, the Cosby accusations sparked a social movement that continued to capsize every industry. And yesterday, Bill Cosby,
went to prison?
Frail and slumping, now 80 years old, he gripped whomever was beside him as he walked into his room. He faced 3 counts of aggravated indecent assault for drugging and sexually assaulting Andrea Constand in 2004. Cosby faces 10 years now, but will remain on bail until sentencing. Guilty! His downfall became official yesterday. Then, as if that weren't enough disgrace, Cosby got nasty. He's always prided himself as the stand-up comedian who doesn't curse. He urged kids to speak well and be respectable. When District Attorney Kevin Steele asked the judge to revoke the $1 million bail, calling him a flight risk, he stood up in court and he says, "He doesn't have a private plane, you a-hole." and apparently the way his face looked, full of nasty rage, was startling. How is this the same man who made funny faces when kids said the darndest things? How is this the same man that we watched? How is this the same man that had been given enough honorary degrees to fill a museum? How is this the guy that made the jazz album? A man so wholesome that he could make all of us feel good about eating pudding. Well, actually, that probably wasn't that hard. But that man is gone now.
The spirits tell me it was only a character, a disguise for a guileful monster.
It's Friday, April 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Do you remember when I used to say you won't recognize your country? I didn't think Bill Cosby was part of that, but apparently now so is Tom Brokaw. What is happening? Yesterday, let's say hello to Stu. Hello, Stu, our executive producer. Yesterday, the news came out about Bill Cosby going to jail, and one of the reporters asked, "How much does the Me Too movement play a role in the verdict?" Stu?
Yeah, this is a disturbing, interesting question, because I think we all understand, first of all, if Bill Cosby is guilty of these things, it's great that he's in prison. Mm-hmm. We're very happy about that. It's interesting that his, you know, sort of prosecution here was made sort of as a campaign promise. I will go after Bill Cosby if elected, and now he has. You know, now he's gone after him, and now here we go. Bill Cosby's going to prison. And I think he did, my guess is, right, like, and we don't know, but my guess is he did do these things. What's I thought interesting about that question, though, in particular, because it was asked all over the place, what impact did the Me Too movement have on this verdict? They already tried this case, and there was a mistrial. They went back to the court and got multiple additional witnesses. So initially, obviously, typically, they're thinking, well, this is about this case, this guy with this woman. Why do we want additional accusers? Last time they let one additional accuser testify. This time I think it was five. So they got extra accusers in there, and now they got the verdict that they wanted.
But and one of them is one of them now being pursued for perjury? See if I can find this. Yeah, Steele also raised the possibility that Marguerite Margot Jackson, the defense's star witness, may be investigated for perjury after the prosecution strongly implied her statement had been created and coached out of her by defense counsel. Hmm. So it's actually somebody on his side.
Hmm. The issue here, though, is the Me Too movement is an interesting part of this, because that was the talk afterwards, the analysis. What did the Me Too movement have to do? Before this last trial, they didn't get this verdict. Then the Me Too movement happens, and then they get the verdict. Well, that should have absolutely nothing to do with this trial. Nothing. This is a trial is about whether one person did something to someone else. It's not about whether guys in general are bad. It's not about whether Harvey Weinstein did a bunch of terrible things to people. It's about Bill Cosby. Now, look, looking at the evidence, I think it's probably right that he's going to prison for this. It certainly seems like there's an incredible amount of evidence. But the idea that attitudes generally change in society should have no effect on a man's innocence or guilt. It is supposed to be a really cold transaction, right? Mm-hmm. You go to court and there's a very sober look at facts. And then afterwards, you come up with a verdict of whether one person, Bill Cosby, did this terrible thing to one other person. Not whether, you know, Louis C.K. did something, and whether, you know, name the actor or actress you want to, actor or producer you want to put into this. The bottom line is, like, if that is true, that that had an effect on this trial, he didn't get justice. I think he probably did do it, but again, you don't try these things in the court of public opinion. It's supposed to be a cold, sober transaction. I'm worried about whether it was or not.
So here's the next piece of news. Tom Brokaw, apparently an NBC correspondent, says that Tom Brokaw made unwanted advances toward her 2 decades ago, groping and trying to forcibly kiss her. Linda Vester, who covered the Middle East and Africa for NBC, later joined Fox News, was in her 20s the time that she says Brokaw made the advances. He's now 78. He said, I met with Linda Vester on 2 occasions, both at her request 23 years ago because she wanted advice with respect to her career at NBC. The meetings were brief, cordial, and appropriate, and despite Linda's allegations, I made no romantic overtures toward her at that time or any other. She said, while I was standing there in the Denver bureau with my back to the door, from behind me, out of nowhere, Tom Brokaw walked up, put his hands on my waist, and tickled me up and down my waist. It was physically unpleasant and humiliating. I jumped a foot and looked at the editor of the nightly news in the eye. He looked back and his jaw had dropped. No one did a thing. There was nothing I could do or say because I was so low on the totem pole. Okay. Inappropriate. Absolutely inappropriate. But he tickled you in front of people. Is that worth? Is that part of the Me Too thing?
Public tickling?
Yes.
I hadn't heard that before, but I mean, you know, and you're right. It's an inappropriate touch if it happened. He says it didn't happen. And of course, how would anyone know?
Okay, there's more. Mm-hmm. There's more, but I just want to take this piece by piece. Yeah, I barely knew him. I didn't work for his broadcast. But when the most powerful man of the network sends you a computer message, you answer him. According to Variety, she's speaking out because she believes her story sheds light on the culture of NBC News. Well, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I felt trapped. It was in. Okay. She described another incident in New York when Brokaw insisted on visiting her in her hotel room and then twice tried to kiss her. Okay. Well, that's again inappropriate. You know, trying to kiss in the hotel room, you know, unwanted, not a good idea.
No, I would agree. Again, if she felt that way, and we weren't there, we have no idea. Taking just though on those on the accusations, or at least that you've just outlined, they seem obviously probably not a good idea, especially for someone who's powerful at a network to do something like that. But again, if you know, a kiss has to have a consent, right? That consent is almost always implied. And not verbal, right? Very rarely in your life do you say, excuse me, madam, might I kiss you? And that person says, of course you may. Like, that's not typically how humans interact, right?
Well, I did.
Oh, you did? That's all of your...
I did. That's, you no, seriously, I think I don't know if this is entirely true, but I tried to ask, you know, anybody I've kissed before. Mm-hmm. I think I always have asked the first time.
Well, you're a loser, and so
I know it's, and I'm not very effective. I have no game.
No, you have no game.
So I'm just, I.
There are moments, I guess, where you could do. I mean, I probably did it at some point, but again, like typically, you know, right? The point is, you know.
No, that's why I ask, because I never know. I have no game. I ask.
Get it. You're getting hung up on your ineptitude. That's not part of this conversation at the moment.
All right. Okay.
You're all hung up on how pathetic you are. We got it. We all know.
We've all
been here many, many years listening to the show. We're all been interacting with you. Yes, we know you're bad. You're awful. We got it.
All of a sudden. Excuse me. I'd like more, please. Have you ever taken your car in for an oil change? The mechanic finds something wrong, and surprise, you're hit with a repair bill that you didn't expect. It's happened to all of us. It happened to me recently with one of my trucks. I brought it in, and it was a $5,000 repair. What? Can't you fix the one thing that I brought it in for? I didn't ask you to fix that, did I? Well, your car, yeah, so it won't drive. But it wouldn't have cost me $5,000 either. Luckily, I had Car Shield. You don't have to worry about those unexpected surprises if you have Car Shield. If your car breaks down after the warranty expires, you'd be out of pocket for thousands to get it fixed, and it's always horrifying. Now, I can stand at the counter and go, I have Car Shield? Oh, okay, yeah. Let me check. Yep, it's covered. Out of pocket, nothing. Replace your engine, and it'll cost you thousands. Even a sensor can cost over $1,000. There's nothing simple about today's cars, and Car Shield makes the process of fixing your car simple, covered. It's covered. You're okay. You can have your favorite mechanic do it or the dealership do it. It's your choice. They also provide 24/7 roadside assistance and a rental car while yours is being fixed for free. So if your car has 5,000 to 150,000 miles, it doesn't mean you have to pay high repair bills. CarShield administrators have paid out close to $2 billion and they're ready to help you. So save yourself thousands in future car repairs, like I just did. Call 1-800-CAR-6100, 1-800-CAR-6100. Mention the promo code Beck or visit carshield.com. Use the promo code Beck, save 10%. Carshield.com, promo code Beck. A deductible may apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Well, there is so much to talk about here. The migrant caravan is at our border now in Tijuana. Not a surprise. Trying to get in, not to Texas, trying to get into California.
Why do people live here?
I mean, from Los Angeles, where it's beautiful and sunny all the time. So they're preparing for a mass crossing. Could be this weekend. That's fantastic news. I can't wait to talk to Bill O'Reilly today because I want to talk to him about that. Tom Brokaw. Also, Joy Reid from MSNBC. Have you heard the latest now that they have, you know, her excuse was, I said some bad things about gay people. Sure. I mean, but it was a different time. Oh, really? And I didn't mean it. Then some more stuff comes out. And instead of just saying, yes, I told you I had that point of view or whatever, she's now saying, well, somebody hacked onto my site. No, because apparently the Library of Congress in 2006 archived her website, I think, along with everybody else's. And shows now that apparently these hackers were so thorough that they not only hacked her site, you know, so they could release this stuff now, but they also went back in time and hacked the copy in 2006 that the Library of Congress has. Wow.
Yeah, that's a problem, because now their claim rests on the fact that it was not hacked today, when you could at least understand in theory why someone would want to ruin her career, because she's a kind of known person on MSNBC.
Not really.
Not really.
But I mean, the people then, at NBC are in surprise. They're like, who's this Joy Reid?
Yeah. And back then, though, it's like she was fairly unknown, even locally. And someone would have had to hack with similar things that she was actually writing and admitted to, which is such a weird hack, right? Like, if you're going to hack someone, you're going to do something that they wouldn't normally do. You wouldn't just continue writing in the same style with the same stuff.
So
they had a tech expert they hired, and they claimed there was an FBI investigation going on this hacking. And they picked six pictures that they said were altered. So screenshots, they didn't even exist on the site. Well, now people have gone back and found that those pictures, those excerpts did exist on the site the whole time. So they were wrong on that. There was another part where some of the blog posts were tagged with things like, gay issues or something. And her claim was, well, I never did that. I never tagged anything with gay issues. And they looked back at it, and it was a third party site that did that. Without their knowledge, had nothing to do with them. But again, proves, right, that another site saw the post at the time and tagged it gay issues. There's another, they found a comment about one of her posts on a different website at that time.
These hackers are very thorough.
Very thorough.
They're very thorough.
Very thorough.
Very thorough. All right. We have a really fascinating person who has quite the story to tell. Coming up next, how would you feel if the government just came in and said, oh yeah, your house is mine.
Glenn.
You gotta leave.
Back.
Next.
Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I'm very much focused right now on talking to people who have actually witnessed firsthand history, real history. I saw a video clip on YouTube the other day of a man who witnessed the shooting of Abraham Lincoln. And it was on an old show in the 1950s called I've Got a Secret. And this old 90-year-old guy stepped to the plate, and he was 5 years old. All he remembered was Booth jumping out of the presidential box and breaking his leg on stage. He remembered that. And it was such a fascinating thing that, you know, wow. A few years ago, I found the story of Tokyo Rose and how she was wronged and how all of history is wrong about her. And I wish I would have talked to her because she had just died. Well, there's somebody else that has played a huge role in our country's history, not that she meant to. Her name is Suzette Kilo, the Kilo case. She is the woman who bought a little house, painted it pink, was in love with it, and the city came and said, yeah, we're going to take your house, eminent domain, because we're going to give it to this giant corporation, or we're going to build a hotel there, and they'll pay more tax money. It's an amazingly true story of a small-town paramedic that left a bad marriage, buys a house, paints it pink, and then tries to stop it from being bulldozed by the city. She loses that case, but she has changed history because she stood. Suzette Kilo is with us now. Her story is being told in the film Little Pink House. Also, Courtney Moorhead Balaker is with us. She's the writer, director, and producer of the movie. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you for having us, Glenn.
Yes, good morning. Thank you.
You bet. Suzette, since we reached out last week and I saw the movie, and I thought, I've got to talk to you. You've done very few interviews, I've heard, but I've seen you speak. My producers have seen you speak before. Can you just tell the story a little bit on what it felt like to have somebody knock at your door and say, we're going to take your house?
Well, I guess you could say it's like your worst nightmare, right? So, you know, here we are just living in this little neighborhood, myself and my neighbors, and that's exactly what happened. The articles in the paper, of course, started first, so we were aware of what was going on. And then as time went on, real estate agents came forward, whether they were working independently or for New London Development Corporation, you know, or both, and, you know, saying that, you know, we'd like to buy your house and, you know, do you want to sell it? And that's pretty much how it happened. And to say the first time is, you know, no, I'm not interested in selling it, and the second time to come back and be confronted with, if you don't sell it, you're going to lose it by eminent domain.
At that point, you had to have thought, because I know I would have, you can't do that. I'm not going to lose my house. Get off my lawn. This is my house, not in America. Is that the attitude you had?
Yeah, that's exactly right. She was standing on the porch, and she came in, and I asked her a similar question as to the brooch, and saying, you know, the value of something that's your family heirloom, and you know, that she got what I was talking about, and then I told her, I said, don't come back, because if you come back, I'll throw you off the porch, so, you know, I'll throw you out, so don't come back again. So I'm not interested in selling my property.
And when you heard the Supreme Court rule against you, what happened? What was going through your mind?
Well, we as the group knew that if they didn't rule in our favor, that, you know, we would have to leave. But we never in a million years ever thought it would happen. It was almost, you know, I describe it as like everything in the beginning. We started as a little grassroots, group saying, you know, if we write this letter to the editor, perhaps all this will stop. Or if I go on this news program, we talk, it'll stop. So, you know, every time that something happened that we did, myself and my neighbors just prayed that the eminent domain would stop. And when IJ took the case, we said, okay, now this is going to stop. But it just continued with you know, not going in our favor. And again, when it went to the United States Supreme Court, we said, okay, now it's going to stop. Now we'll be safe. But even then, we weren't.
So, Suzette, when it's all said and done, I remember, I mean, there were a few, I think the year was 1995, that I started really questioning what, how our system even works. When I saw O.J. Simpson go free, when I saw Timothy McVeigh blow up the federal building the same year, I remember thinking, I don't know if I know my country. How do you feel today? Do you feel the same about the country as you did before?
Well, you know, we used to say as the group that here we are in this little neighborhood, we're minding our own business, we're going to work every day, we're law-abiding citizens, we're paying our taxes, we maintain our property, and that's what we said. How can they do this to us? I often referred to, when I spoke to public officials, often said that the wolves are at our doors. We're being threatened in our own homes. And the way I often answer a question like this is, we're fortunate we live in a country where we could fight, but it's unbelievable that we were pushed to have to fight, I guess. You know,
yeah. Right. And the fact that nobody has built anything on your property and it's still sitting now empty and unattended with zero tax dollars going into the city, how's that make you feel?
Well, you know, really, that's our just dessert. That's their just dessert. You know, that's our victory as the neighbors in that neighborhood, as the people that were there. That's our victory, that nothing came there. And you know what I mean, in the sense of, look what you did, and you did it all for nothing. And, you know, and that for us is our victory, that it is empty.
Courtney, you're the writer, the producer, and the director of this film. By the way, great job. I thought you told the story really, really well, and it was really well done. When you saw this story, what made you think, oh, I have to tell this story, and this is going to be something people are going to want to go see?
Mm-hmm. Well, two reasons, really. First of all, I was completely outraged when I read the book, Little Pink House, written by Jeff Benedict. It's a fantastic book that documented the entire ordeal. It was a 10-year time span for Suzette and her neighbors, from when she bought her house, fixed it up, painted it pink, to the time when the Supreme Court decision came out. I could not believe that something like this happened, that something like this was considered legal by the United States Supreme Court. And the other reason I had to make the film is because I was blown away by Suzette's stance, her principled position to say, no, you can't do this. This is not right. Suzette didn't want to be the public face of this issue. She didn't want to be a crusader. She did this completely outside of her comfort zone, and I was really inspired by her resistance and her integrity, and I felt like America needed to see what happened in this town, not only to show how horrible cronyism is, but that it still happens all over the country, and we want to use the film to bring awareness to that and hopefully bring an end to it.
Was there any artistic license taken, Suzette, with your story? I mean, you had to have been, you had some rough years. You leave a bad marriage, you find a house, you fix it up, it's great, you fall in love with a decent guy who you eventually marry, But he is debilitated halfway through this fight. I mean, I don't know what kept you going. Is all of that true?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Every minute of it is true. Absolutely. Yep.
So what kept you going?
Perseverance. I don't know. I don't know what kept me going. Just because it was the right thing to do for the fight for the fort where we were. I mean, that was, you know, was the right thing to do. And just, you know, my perseverance. I just kept plowing forward. Yeah.
Courtney, I can't. It's hard to believe a movie like this could get made because, you know, we see the way Hollywood kind of treats a lot of these stories, and they don't want to tell stories like this where the government is doing things like this, and these are real constitutional issues where you're teaching, you know, America in an interesting and entertaining way a really sad story about what can do if government grows too large. How did this movie even get made?
Well, yeah, you know, making any independent film is always an uphill battle. My husband and producing partner Ted Ballacher and I, we formed our own company, Corchilla Productions, and our motto is making important ideas entertaining. And we set out to make movies that, you know, basically do just that, that entertain but inform and hopefully have an impact. And, you know, we could have gone to studios and tried to partner with them, but it was very important to us to tell the truth and to make sure that the details of this story were laid out very accurately. This was not Pfizer knocking on doors offering money to people to buy their homes. It was the city that wanted to push Suzette and her neighbors off of their land so that a developer could come in and build stuff that could benefit Pfizer. And, you know, that's an important detail. I think oftentimes Hollywood, you know, always wants to blame one entity. This is a very complicated story. It's a very complicated issue. And as I mentioned earlier, it's about cronyism. When government and big corporations team up, the little guy loses. And often politicians say, "Oh, we're for the little guy." And that's not the case when it comes to eminent domain abuse. And so we wanted to make a film that accurately portrayed what happened in Suzette's neighborhood, and we wanted to put a human face on it, and it was a challenge, but so far we have felt a lot of success and we've been embraced by, we sold out the Guard in New London, Connecticut. That was our world premiere on the 16th. 1,500 people showed up and bought tickets.
Wow.
We had to turn people away. They're having encore performance, and we're in several cities throughout the nation, and people can find out littlepinkhousemovie.com if we're playing in your city, and if we're not, you can bring the film to your town. And, you know, Glenn, we're finding that this is really resonating with people because everybody knows what home is. Whether you own a home or rent a home, everybody knows what that is and the importance of that. And we're very hopeful that audiences will continue to connect with Suzette, not only for what she did, but for what she stands for. And as you said, it's a historic Supreme Court decision, and
it really is. And
millions of homes.
You did a fantastic job on telling the story. I think it's really good.
Thank you.
Last one, Suzette. I grew up in Connecticut and spent many summer weekends at Ocean Beach Park, right down the street from where the story is told. I'm curious, is after all of this happened, did you decide to stay in the area? Does it seem frustrating? Are you angry about it? What happened after the story?
Well, myself and my neighbors, we all bought homes in other towns. None of us stayed in New London. And it's heartbreaking to see New London do what it does to itself, you know, with this eminent domain case. And are we frustrated? Yeah, I guess you could say we were definitely frustrated. Yeah. And like you said, unfortunately, we lost and we all had to, you know, had to have the houses torn down.
Thank you so much for joining us. The website, if you wanted to come to your town or to find out if it is in your town, littlepinkhousemovie.com. Well worth the time spent. Thank you very much for being a part of the program today. By the way, Connecticut continues to do the same thing, and they are driving people out of their state. It's pretty amazing. Big news. Last 2 weeks, Simply Safe won the Editor's Choice Awards from CNET Magazine, PC Magazine, and Wirecutter, three respected product testers. And they put Simply Safe through a battery of tests. They compared it to all the other home security products, and Simply Safe won every time. I've been telling you about Simply Safe for a long time now. I think it's the best home security system money can buy, hands down. And I've known the founders. I know the people that work there. They're good, decent people, and now they protect over 2 million Americans. It's home security system that you will actually want in your home. The sensors are tiny. You won't notice them, but they notice the bad guys. Unbelievably easy to use. You control it from your phone if you want to. And here's the most important reason. It's comprehensive protection for all of your windows, your doors, and your entire home. And 24 hours a day, 365 a year, their professional alarm system monitoring is only $15 a month around the clock. No contracts and $15 a month. No strings, no wires. It's Simply Safe. Go to simplysafebeck.com and take 10% off now. Get my discount of 10% at simplysafebeck.com. That's simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Last night, I gave a speech for a celebration of Israel's 70th at the studio last night. Rabbi Lapin spoke as well, and he's going to be on with us. He told a story about, do you know why Yemen and Sudan are named, where they got their names? It's the most incredible story ever.
Wow.
I had absolutely no idea. He's going to go on with us. When you really understand history, everything just kind of snaps into place. We'll talk to him coming up in an hour or so. Bill O'Reilly is coming up next. There is so much to go over with Bill O'Reilly from the border mess that is coming. The caravan is going to happen this weekend on the border here in California. We'll get his take on that. The latest in Washington. Also, Joy Reid, Tom Brokaw, Bill Cosby. Wow, a lot to cover. Bill O'Reilly next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So what's the measure of human life? You know, this should be a gimme. This should be a no-brainer. But with the way we become so desensitized to the sanctity of human life, does anyone even know anymore what life means? We used to find these things self-evident. But since 2009, the United States is averaging 700,000 abortions per year. We're only 4 months into this year, and we've already killed 298,000 babies. Just this morning, over 700 abortions have been committed in the United States. Now think about that number, and then try to answer that question, whether we even understand the value of human life. We should probably decide this pretty quickly, because we're seeing in the U.S., or I'm sorry, in the U.K. with Alfie Evans, what we're seeing there is going to come here and become our reality. Democrats are poised to make big gains over the next 2 years, and they've already signaled that single-payer health care is going to be their top-ticket item. That's what the U.K. has. And in the U.K., they're considered by progressives as the gold standard when it comes to single-payer health systems. America, you need to ask yourself right now, is that the kind of health care you want? If you want to know what they want for all of us, all you have to do is look across to England. Look at what they're doing. They're murdering today a small baby. Alderhay Hospital is not only denying Alfie medical care, Alfie Evans, his two-year-old kid, but they won't even let his parents take him home to die, let alone just put him on a helicopter that the Pope has provided and let him go to another country, Italy, to be able to be possibly saved. They're now saying that unless his parents have a, quote, sea change in attitude, they're not going to allow Alfie to go home. Are you kidding me? Their son is dying, the state is killing him, and they expect Alfie's parents to have a good attitude? Who the hell do you think you are? Well, let me tell you who they are. As it turns out, Alder Hey Hospital has a long history of treating their patients as little more than cattle. In 1998, a heart specialist at Alder Hey accidentally revealed during an inquiry that the hospital was storing in bulk children's organs. Now, these organs were being held without consent from the parents. Alder Hey Hospital was harvesting the organs from dead children. They were also caught selling human tissue to pharmaceutical companies in exchange for cash donations. Why? Because universal health care doesn't work. But what they didn't sell, they stockpiled. Alder Hey had 2,080 children's hearts, over 800 other organs, 400 full fetuses. A pathologist at Alder Hey was even accused of keeping the head of a baby in a jar. And none of this was done with parental consent. When the story came out finally in 2001, distraught parents begged for their baby's organs to be turned over to them. Many of them held a second funeral. One woman had to bury her baby's heart, lungs, and esophagus. You see, this is what you get when the state controls health care. This is what you get when there's no higher authority. This is what you get when you have to sit down and take it. It's evil. Your choice is being taken away from you. How long does it take for the state to see its people not as human beings, but as a resource, as livestock? And this is what the progressives want for us here in the U.S. Get ready, because the debate for single-payer health care is coming. It's coming in the next 24 months. And when that debate begins, you better believe they won't mention the story of Alder Hey Hospital or Alfie Evans. We're going to have to do it for them.
It's Friday, April 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
The one, the only Bill O'Reilly is joining us now. Bill, any thoughts on this hospital and what's happening over in England?
You know, this isn't the first time that the British authorities have basically said our posture is that if a child or an elderly person cannot survive, if we deem that to be true, then we're not going to do anything to elongate the life. That's what it's about. And they're not going to deviate out of that. The atrocity, though, is that, as you pointed out, the Vatican said, look, we'll care for the child. You know, we believe that life is sacred, and there is a cycle of life, birth and death, and that we'll take care of the child at our expense. So why would the British authorities say, no, you can't do that? That's when you get into real oppression. But I want to address your remarks about America. You know, we live in a climate now where there are a substantial number of American citizens who simply reject any kind of debate or any kind of alternative view on abortion. And they say, well, I know. See, I know when life begins. And it doesn't begin until this date. I know. And then you look at them and you go, how could you possibly know? Nobody knows that. All right? And human DNA and all of the science says that life begins on conception, and 95% of the doctors in the United States will not perform abortions because of that. Did you know that, Beck? 95% will not perform abortions?
I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
95%, according to the AMA, of American doctors will not do the procedure. So that's pretty strong evidence, I think. But if you present the evidence, then you're misogynist. You're against reproductive rights. You hate women. And the New York Times has taken the lead on this. They're the lead media outlet that promotes abortion as a civil right, not an issue to be discussed, not an issue to be, as Bill Clinton once said, you know, rare, We should be everybody should be going together to make abortion rare. As you pointed out, it's not rare. In some circles, it's used as birth control. I know a woman who had 6 abortions, and she doesn't want to use birth control. And when she gets pregnant, she just goes down and has an abortion that Planned Parenthood sets up for her for free. And so all of this stuff is in play. It's all real. And you've got to, you know, to get people's attention to talk about something this horrendous is very difficult because we live in an age of narcissism where people don't want to pay attention to that.
So, Bill, let me go back to Alfie Evans, because I don't know if you saw what the police have put out. But they issued a tweet that said, "I would like to make people aware that these posts are being monitored and remind social media users that any offenses, including malicious communications and threatening behavior, will be investigated where necessary and it will be acted upon." That's not the only one that they put out yesterday. They put out a few of these saying, "We're watching your social media and we will come after you." This is getting more and more Big Brother-esque and controlling of the life. And I wonder if it would happen.
Let me just jump in here and put it into some kind of perspective. I don't disagree that the British authorities could not care less about the life cycle. I mean, it's clear they don't. It's a secular country. They don't believe in religion over there. I mean, their main religion is the Anglican faith, founded by that great theologian, Henry VIII. Okay? So I don't want to be disparaging, but they don't care about religion. But what the police did was, because of this hospital, the people running the hospital have been threatened. Their lives have been threatened. And that's what this is pretty much all about.
So I would like to know what you would do, Bill O'Reilly, if you had baby, you know, Alfie O'Reilly.
I would have gotten out of that system. I have a friend, Graham Barker, who is a physician in Great Britain. I lived there for a year. And Barker is a private physician. He doesn't take government subsidies of any kind. But you got to have money to pay him. And these people don't. So they're
but say that you're not Bill O'Reilly's, you know, wallet.
Right.
And you are his parents. What would you do?
I would go to Italy. For a long time ago, because this is not the first time this has happened. So as soon as the diagnosis came down from the hospital that your baby's going to die and we're not going to elongate the baby's life under any circumstances, the next day I would have been on a plane or a train to Italy and to appeal to the Vatican, because the Vatican will help. So that's what I would have done.
Do you think this is coming here and people will
tolerate it? I don't think it's coming here for constitutional reasons. I don't think you're ever going to have euthanasia here. I don't think you're ever going to have a system whereby the government prevents you from going to Rome to save your baby or elongate the baby's life. I don't think you'll ever have that because of constitutional issues. Our constitution is much stronger than Britain. But what I think that there is going to be a struggle about, and it's a shame, is this abortion business. Because if you are pro-life, if your religion or your morality dictates that you believe a baby is a human being on conception, now it's allowed that the other side can attack you and demonize you and try to destroy you. That's really the essence of this. We live in a society, the Supreme Court has ruled Roe v. Wade, that abortion is the law, okay? But to attack people, to try to harm them because they hold in a poison point of view, as the liberal media does, is disgraceful.
Back with Bill O'Reilly here in just a second. Also, earlier this week, I talked to Dave Rubin about abortion. He's a guy who used to describe himself as a progressive. A year ago, he started down this road, and he is still pro-choice. But we had a fascinating conversation about he recognizes that he's being hypocritical in some ways, and he kind of hinted that I know I'm going to be moving at some point. More with Bill O'Reilly in just a second. We have to cover the end of the Korean War, which much to many people's surprise, is still going on. We'll have that coming up next. All right, I want to tell you a little bit about FilterBuy, and thank you, FilterBuy, for being one of our sponsors. This is a company that makes air filters for your home. It also makes it for your office. U.S. companies lose about $250 million a year due to employees just having allergies. And some places, it's horrible. In Texas, it's awful. We have to keep our filters clean at the studio because there's so much pollen in the air and everybody just suffers so badly. So what do? Think of the difference you would make at home, especially when you sleep, and also at your office if you run a business, just by changing your air filters. And the air filter, the leading provider of HVAC filters for homes and small businesses, is FilterBuy. They make it easy for you to improve the quality of the air that you breathe. They save you money because it reduces the wear and tear on your HVAC system. All of the air filters made here in America and ship for free within 24 hours. And you can even set up auto delivery if you want, and you can save 5%. You're never going to need a reminder again to change your air filter. So here's the deal. Right now, they have over 600 sizes that are available, custom options if you need one. You're going to find the right filter for your home or for your business. So change your filter now. It's filterbuy.com. FilterBuy.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We have so much to talk to Bill O'Reilly about before the end of the hour. The end of the Korean War, Bill Cosby, the migrant caravan that's on our border now, Joy Reid, Ronnie Jackson, Tom Brokaw, just a lot to cover. Bill, let's start with the end of the Korean War last night.
Yeah, the reason this happened, I just posted this on BillO'Reilly.com. Message of the day, Beck, which I know you eagerly read each morning to imbue yourself with wisdom.
And oh, my gosh, yes.
To stew what that means. Anyway, here's what happened. You ready for what really happened?
Yes.
So, the Chinese told the little rocket man, hey, you're bad for business, bud, and you're going to knock it off. And if you don't knock it off, we're stopping the oil flow into your little kingdom there, and everything will collapse, and you will be killed, all right? So that's what the Chinese said to the little rocket guy, all right? So he pulled up his short pants, and he said, I better do something here, and it's not going my way. Nobody's on my side, so I'll get back in the spotlight by seeming to be reasonable. First, I'll agree to meet with President Trump, which is like a big win for me because I'm no one, but he's the most famous person in the world now. And secondly, I'll run across the militarized border and embrace my counterpart in South Korea and say the Korean War is dead. All of this is happening to fulfill the narcissism of Little Rocket Guy. But that's okay. Because it's a benefit to the world if it all plays out. And I think it will, because China has had enough. They don't want the world economy roiled because of this little nut. And that's what's happening.
So what does it mean that the end of the Korean War? What does that mean?
The Korean War was never really, there was never a treaty. It was a stalemate, as you'll remember.
Yeah.
Killing the rising sun. I mean, after World War II, the communist North and the capitalist South faced off, and then they fought. And America came into the war on the side of South Korea. China came in on North Korea, but nobody won. So they just stopped fighting. No treaty. So now it looks like Little Rocket Guy is going to ask for a formal end to the war, which is 65 years old now. And
so will that mean
that, a good thing.
Is this like an end to the wall, or do you think that remains?
Yeah, it could be. It could be the Berlin situation. They could have, but the problem for Little Rocket Guy is, and why I don't think the wall will come down, is because as soon as it comes down, everybody in North Korea will leave. He'll be alone.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
They'll all go, yay, see you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
South Korea doesn't want that, because then they'd have to feed them all. China doesn't want that. So it'll probably still remain the same, but the level of threat from North Korea will drop, at least in the short term.
Bill, is there a quick question here? If you're going to use the nickname, shouldn't you use it with the Elton John song? You're calling him Little Rocket Guy. Is there a reason you're not calling
him better than Rocket Man? Because I don't consider this guy a man.
Okay,
you know, a real man doesn't murder people and doesn't starve his own population. Okay. So Little Rocket Guy, I think, is just even more insulting.
And part two, the second part of this is, are you concerned that everyone declares peace in our time, we pull out our troops, everyone's pulled down their defenses, and then North Korea can go into South Korea without any opposition?
Well, we're not going to pull our troops out, number one. That'll never happen. Because you just need them there strategically. You need the air bases because of China. So that's never going to happen. The guy, you know, he's crazy, could do anything. But at this point, it's a big win for Trump. Of course, that's why the liberal media is playing it down. You're not going to see it. This will be a one-day story. And then, the best thing that Kim Jong-un could have done, as I pointed out on BillO'Reilly.com, is gone to South Korea with Stormy Daniels. All right? If he had done that,
they would have covered it.
Massive coverage everywhere.
Yes, yes, yes.
And Stormy would have
done it. It's really amazing. It's really amazing.
Stormy would have done it.
How do you not recognize this as a Trump victory?
Well, they don't want, you know, of course it's a Trump victory because China knows that Trump is going to give them a hard time unless they cooperate on North Korea and the trade imbalance. China knows that. Obama couldn't care less. They can do whatever they want when Obama's in Wyatt. Trump's a different guy.
Isn't the reason, though, that we don't recognize it as a Trump victory is that it's not yet a victory, right? It's a step in the right direction.
But you, Stu, don't you want the story to be covered?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, of
course. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, you go out now and you talk to the American public about, hey, did you see what Kim Jong-un did today? And they look at you like, what? What? Why? And then you said, he was with Stormy Daniels. Really? Really?
It's true. You put Stormy in the middle of this. Again, that's why Rodman, that's the only time North Korea ever gets covered is when Rodman went over there. If you throw Stormy in the middle of this.
I think they threatened that he was going to go back, and that was another reason why they're...
Bill. Bill,
happy with that analysis, Beck? I think that's
I think it's pretty good, Bill. I think it's pretty good.
Thank you.
And I take a little bit of umbrage, if you will, with Stu here on it's not really a Trump victory because it's not done yet. Yeah, it's not. And I don't want to declare peace in our time. I don't want to be Neville Chamberlain. But it is movement that we have never seen before. And you know, if anyone else were president, we would not be seeing this movement. Now, how it ends, I don't know. But today, it's a victory.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Life is all about making the right decision in big moments. When you have that huge thing going on in your life and you can go one of two paths, it's important to choose the right path because it doesn't matter how many small choices you make that are right in those other moments. If you make the wrong choice at a big moment, it's going to burn you for a long time. I can give you a good example of this, real estate agents. If you pick the wrong real estate agent and then you have to go through selling or buying a home, it can be a mistake that haunts you for a really long time. That's one of the reasons Glenn and his wife Tanya started realestateagentsitrust.com. They were trying to sell their house. They were frustrated with it, and they thought there's just got to be a better way to get this done. What they have come up with is a system to screen real estate agents for people who share your values, listen to the show, and you know have great marketing plans and know how to do this better than anyone. They have 1,200 agents all across America. You just put your location in there, and you get the best agent in your area. It's realestateagentsitrust.com, realestateagentsitrust.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So we have Bill O'Reilly on, and I would like to ask him, no bloviating word of the day, Bill.
Nope. Okay.
We have a lot to go over. Let's start with the migrant caravan that has now reunited in Tijuana, and they're planning on crossing the border together this weekend and come into the United States illegally.
Yeah, not going to happen. Mexican police will stop it.
You don't think that America is going to have to get involved in something like what's happening with the Palestinians?
No. I think that the Mexican government, again, this is because of Trump, is so scared of him that and NAFTA is being renegotiated, as you know, right now. So those people are, you know, they'll have brunch and then they'll go home.
Why wouldn't the Mexican government have stopped it beforehand? I mean,
they broke it up in central Mexico, and there's, you know, a few diehards, but not that many. But they did break it up after Trump said, you better break
there
it up.
Or 600 of them.
Yeah.
I believe there's 600 of them.
I don't think so. I don't think there's that many. There may be 200 or whatever. It's a stunt. But the Mexican police are pretty tough, and they're not going to let these people get to the border. That's a big border crossing, by the way. And I predict, I could be wrong, that the demonstrators won't even get close to the border.
That would be great if that were true. Let's go to Joy Reid. Do you know Joy Reid?
I do not. Never had the pleasure of meeting the woman.
Okay. She first said that her website was hacked. No, no. She first said that she has made homophobic statements in the past. Then she said that her website was hacked and the homophobic posts were fabricated. Now we know, after some forensics, that this would have had to be a really sophisticated hacker that could have seen the future, because the Library of Congress went and archived all of the blogs at the time in 2006, and these posts were on the blog at that time. So unless they went back and fabricated them, either broke into the National Archives as well, or They fabricated her at the time, hoping that she would become famous and all of this would matter. Looks like she wrote them.
Yeah, looks like she wrote them. So now we have a far left person who doesn't like gays, or at least didn't like them. And that's what we have. And that's, I think, the truth.
And so what should happen to her?
You know, NBC is probably going to just ease her out. That's usually what happens in these big organizations. But I really can't predict what will happen, other than she's lost credibility among her core believers. So that's not a good thing for her.
Okay, there's the breaking news stations. Breaking news, Bill O'Reilly seems to claim that Joy Reid has believers. I didn't
that
even know she was even on TV.
You know, that MSNBC cult, they should move to Eastern Oregon, where the Rajneesh guy was at one time, and they can live there all together. That's what I would like to see.
NBC seems to be having trouble. Talk to me about Tom Brokaw.
You know, I know Brokaw for a long time. As I told you when I had to deal with this, there are two things that are in stone. Number one, you take each case on its own. You do not generalize about anything. Number two, nobody really knows what happened, because nobody was there other than the principals who lodge accusations and those who deny. So when you keep that into perspective, the other bit of wisdom that I gave you and Stu was that every single prosperous man in this country is at risk. Not one man in America who's prosperous is not at risk. Now, I don't know what happened with Tom Brokaw. I hear rumors every day of 30 famous people that are going to be accused of stuff, misconduct. All right? I don't know. I don't know what happened. I always feel bad when lives are disrupted this way, because it happened to me, and I know how painful it is.
Bill Cosby, he was found guilty yesterday.
Well, I think justice was served. I think he did it. I think he's got a shot on appeal, though, because the state, the prosecutor's office, I mean, they did some pretty underhanded things. But I think the jury's verdict is correct from what I can see as a journalist covering it.
It does seem there would be a significant line between a lot of these accusations and the Cosby situation. And that Cosby's case goes to court. There's an actual proceeding. He's found guilty. You know, we've had a lot of accusations about people, and there have been very few of these supposedly illegal acts that have actually been prosecuted, including even Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, it's up to the authorities to bring these cases, but I can tell you there's a big story in New York City right now. The city government had to deal with 1,312 complaints of sexual harassment from July 13 through 2017. 1,312. 221 were substantiated. So this is a complicated situation, all right? And it's a situation that is brutal, because women and men should not be abused by anyone in power, but there are also a lot of false accusations in this world.
So let's talk about an accusation that's not being covered, really. The Clinton campaign effectively laundering $84 million during the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. The press is up in arms over, $130,000? Has this violated campaign finance? $130,000 to Stormy Daniels, which I think, if it's true, it's a big deal if it broke any laws. But this is $84 million, and they can't seem time to report on this.
You know, look, the Clintons from day one have gamed the system. And I told you guys this. I have a foundation, a charitable foundation named after my parents. And we, over the years, have given away millions and millions of dollars. I have never taken a cent from that foundation. The New York Times, trying to hang me, investigated that foundation every which way. And they found it was clean and beneficial. Of course, they didn't print that. All right?
Right,
but we knew
right.
They were investigating because my attorneys were giving them all the documents they asked for. They wanted to tie that into that I was the worst person on earth. Now, Clinton Foundation has raised hundreds of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions, and that's provided the Clintons themselves with money, with private jets, with writing off pretty much everything they've ever done. They game the system. They game it. And, you know, you're right. Who cares about that? Does Jeff Sessions care about that? I don't think so. I haven't seen anybody in the Justice Department caring about it. You know, if Trump hates Hillary so much, why doesn't he get on it? I don't know.
But this isn't even the Clinton Foundation, which I agree with you. Boy, there is so much smoke there that something's got to be on fire. But this
to give the folks, to give your listeners, that these people game the system. Whitewater, and it's you know, they game it, all right? They look at it and they say, how can we use the system to enrich ourselves? So yeah, it should be looked at. But who's going to do it? Is Jeff Sessions going to do it? I don't think so, but maybe I'm wrong.
Let's talk about Ronny Jackson. Ronny Jackson was nominated to be the head of the VA. He was the president's doctor, not the crazy doctor, the doctor that looked over the president and the last president. Both presidents have spoken highly of this man.
Yeah.
Obama, it was completely silent as they eviscerated this man's credibility.
Yeah,
thoughts?
Because, that's his modus operandi. He's not jumping in the fray. Look. Anybody attached to Trump, if Trump likes you, then the media is going to try to destroy you. I mean, that's part of the Me Too movement as well. If you're on the side of Trump or perceived to even be fair to him, they're going to try to get you. So Ronnie, you know, I don't know what Ronnie did. He's an admiral. He served his country well. As you pointed out, three presidents. You know, he was W's physician, too. Loved the guy. But apparently he had a few too many one night, and that was it. Bang, they got him, and he's gone. And that's it for Ronnie.
Kanye West, any thoughts?
I was in an elevator with him one time, Beck. Do you know that?
No, I did not know
that.
Yeah,
Madison Square Garden. It was me, Kanye, and two of Kanye's 7-foot bodyguards. I could barely get in. Kanye
right.
had short pants on, and he's about 5'7". Mm-hmm. But these guys were really big. And we didn't really have a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've been following. I don't know if you've been following what he's been saying on Twitter this week.
Yeah, he likes Trump. You know, he likes him. So Kanye's got a new record, and what better way to have everybody turn their attention to Kanye than to say, yeah, I like Trump? And then, John Legend, that who's going for PhD in political science, I believe, tweets, Kanye, how can you turn eyes like this? You're so brilliant. I love you, but you have to hate Trump. I love you, Kanye, but you have to hate. I can't love you. That was John Legend.
Sounded just like him.
Wow, that was very good.
I thought you were playing a recording.
Thank you very much.
So yeah. Do you think that there's anything to be said? Dave Rubin, I was talking to Dave Rubin and Ben Shapiro this week, and they both seem to believe, and I fall into this category, that, you know, what he's done is he's breaking a cultural barrier. He's speaking to people that are not involved in the everyday back and forth. And all he's saying now is, don't we have a right to have a different opinion? Why? I'm just saying this in love. I like Hillary. I like Trump. I don't like everything Trump does. I don't agree with everybody on everything. But don't we have a right to have a different point of view?
You don't have a right to have a different point of view. If the Hollywood elite say that somebody's bad, they have to be bad, or you don't work, or you can't go to a restaurant, and we hate you. I mean, that's what's happened in this country. Come on, we all know it. So, you know, Kanye can say what he wants because he has tens of millions of dollars, but if Kanye were a character actor and was just trying to go for a few roles to keep his mortgage paid, he couldn't say what he wanted, and that's the truth.
Bill O'Reilly, the No Spin Zone continues.
I got to give one plug before you dismiss me and go on to whatever else you do on this.
Well, I'm going to dismiss you like a... Yes,
right,
go
we
ahead.
Announced the new Killing book this week. It's Killing Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. Now, you can pre-order it. I've already pre-ordered you and Stu copies. I've already done that because I know you want to
read
it.
I don't have a single copy from you signed. Okay. I have an autographed collection.
I'm stamping it. I'm doing everything.
No, you won't.
What we found out about after World War II and these SS, I don't even know what the word is. They're so evil.
Monsters.
And how they escaped and who helped them and then how they ultimately got tracked down is amazing. So anyway, we want everybody to go to BillO'Reilly.com. Check that out. There's a little commentary by me. I always post, if you just came in late for the Beck, Stu, O'Reilly confab, I always post, and you do too, on the Blaze, our conversation so people can hear the whole thing.
Yeah, no,
I'm finished,
Bill,
back. I can go now.
No, I'm not done. I mean, was Hitler in Venezuela? Did he?
No, but very big guys close to him got away. And I'm not going to give it all away, but one of them, Martin Bormann, it's unbelievable what happened. And the final chapter of this book, I'm never talking about because it's so stunning that I don't want anybody to know until they read the book. But the final chapter...
So you're like M. Night. This is like an M. Night book.
M. Night Shyamalan?
I'm telling you, Beck, you know me. I always lay it on a line.
I know. Okay, thanks so much, Bill. BillO'Reilly.com. And every Friday, Bill O'Reilly appears here, and we just kind of run down the news of the week and get his opinion. But you can get it every day at BillO'Reilly.com. All right. If you run a business, you know how hard it is to find great people. Especially if you're running a business, you know, by yourself. It's a small business, and you're just looking for, a position. You're like, I've got to make the donuts, and I've got to be HR. I mean, I just don't have time. Well, ZipRecruiter started a long time ago, and what they did is they would post to 100-plus job sites for you, so you only had to post once, and then it would post everything else. Well, ZipRecruiter knew there had to be a smarter way, and there is. Now, with artificial intelligence, ZipRecruiter can learn what you're looking for. It can identify the people with the right experience and the right kind of position for your job and invite them to apply. Now, it's the invitations that have revolutionized how you find your next hire. You can get a quality candidate. In fact, 80% of the people that use ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate in the first day. But it doesn't stop there. The ZipRecruiter, as you start having these candidates roll in, it spotlights the strongest applications that you receive. So, you know, if you're really in a hurry and you get a buttload of applications, these are all going to be marked as this one's really good, this one's really good, so you don't ever miss the right hire. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes and industries to find the most qualified job candidates. Right now, you can post your job for free on ZipRecruiter at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Remember, it's free if you use ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Still to come, we have the amazing Dave Rubin. A great conversation with him, still to come. Also, Daniel Lapin, next week, the director of The Exorcist, who has put a new documentary together that said, I just witnessed a real exorcism. I would have made The Exorcist differently now. And he says it's more terrifying than The Exorcist. We'll talk to him next week. Also, Mr. Pat Gray is going to be joining the broadcast program coming up an hour from now on most of this network. If you want to hear Pat Gray, he is back, and we thank you for his prayers on behalf of him as he was in kidney failure last week. He is back on the radio beginning today.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So how's this for a headline that you might have missed along with the rest of America? The Hillary Clinton campaign effectively laundered $84 million during the 2016 election. Wait a minute. What? That's the allegation made in a lawsuit filed in D.C. federal court last week by a group called the Committee to Defend the President. Now, why is it a group of Trump supporters that have to do this? If you haven't heard of this, it's probably because last week's priority lawsuit was the one filed by Democrats against Trump and the Trump campaign, WikiLeaks, and Russia. Now, to be fair, it is so darn hard to squeeze in the potential bombshell news about Hillary Clinton's campaign corruption with so much Comey, Russia, Michael Cohen, and Stormy Daniels updates to cover. I mean, what am I going to do? There's only so much time, America. Now, basically, here's how campaign finance is supposed to work. You want to give a candidate some money. You can give them up to $2,700 to any candidate you want. Well, it better be the right one or I'm going to unfollow you. $10,000 to any state party committee. And during the 2016 election, $33,400 to the national party. Now, oftentimes, a donor will give one lump sum, let's say $100,000. So if that person wrote a check for $100,000, which, oh man, I can't think of a dollar more well spent than that. Let's say you wrote a $100,000 check to the Hillary Victory Fund, which was Clinton's joint fundraising committee. Now, under the campaign finance law, the Hillary Victory Fund would then have to distribute that money in the allowed amounts to the Hillary Clinton campaign, which would be $2,700, and the DNC, $33,400, and the remaining $63,900, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, would be dispersed to the state's party committees. So no more than $10,000 to any one state committee. That's what's permitted by law. Well, here's a shocking news flash. Just off the wire, the Hillary Victory Fund apparently did not follow the rules. We've got to get big money out of politics. Or just maybe live by the rules would be nice. Now, pick your jaw up off the floor, I know. Especially if you're driving, that jaw could fall on the accelerator and,
Oh, you could drive through a Denny's. The Hillary Victory Fund frequently received a big donation, like our $100,000 example, and would transfer, at least on paper, the correct amounts to the state committees. But then, the exact same amount was magically transferred back to the DNC, either on the same day or the next day. It's like magic, kids. Mary Poppins might have been working someplace at the DNC. The DNC then contributed most of those funds to Hillary for America, which was Hillary's campaign committee. See how they're laundering the money? Kids and politicians will do the darndest things. The state committees often don't have records of having either received or sent funds in those amounts. Wait a minute! Now that's crazy, you crazy kids. And we would have got away with it if it wasn't for those crazy kids in their mystery van. Quoting from the lawsuit, quote, public statements from both the then chairwoman of the DNC, Donna Brazil. Oh, now don't tell me she's involved. She's always seemed so credible and upfront. And Hillary for America chief financial officer, Gary Gensler, confirm Hillary for America controlled the DNC's finances, the strategy, and expenditures. Wait a minute. So they were both putting in and then having to ask themselves to do something illegal? I find that hard to believe with the Clintons involved. The funds raised through the Hillary Victory Fund ended up under the direction and control of Hillary for America. That's pretty weird. And that is also the illegal part. Money going from state party committees back to the national party committee is commonplace. Both Republicans and Democrats do that. But the money at the DNC then flowing directly to Hillary for America is what we like to call against the law. Yeah, I know, like there is any law anymore. For a year prior to the election day, the DNC also made at least 59 coordinated expenditures with the Clinton campaign, which campaign finance law treats as contributions to Hillary for America. Those expenditures totaled $22.8 million. Now, I want to point this out because not only is it wrong and we need to clean up campaign finance, but the media is losing its mind over Michael Cohen's $130,000 payment to Stormy Daniels and whether or not it qualifies as a campaign contribution. And that is a big deal. I want that investigated. I want to know. It's $130,000. Is this an illegal contribution? It's kind of like, you know, when they put our good friend Dinesh D'Souza in prison for a $10,000 donation? I don't know. I think $84 million is worth at least a headline. Donna Brazil laid out much of this in a Politico magazine article last November, but the media yawned and went back to checking Trump's Twitter feed. According to the lawsuit, these allegations are built entirely on the FEC's reports filed by the Hillary Victory Fund, the DNC, the state Democratic parties. Politico magazine also reported on this scheme way back in June of 2016. But the mainstream media didn't bat an eyelid because they were full on Trump panic mode at that time. Even Bernie Sanders accused the Clinton campaign of money laundering prior to the DNC convention. So the current lawsuit is not just another partisan attack. It's just left up to the people who support the president to say, hey, is anyone going to pay attention to this? So what does all this mean? Well, it means more than just the mainstream media is barking up the wrong tree. It also means, for some strange reason, they don't care when it happens to the people on their side. They haven't learned a damn thing. And this is why the media will soon be out in the parking lot kicking rocks, asking themselves, how did my empire fall apart? If there's one good thing that the Clintons are really experts at, well, you'd have to redefine good, but it's manipulating the flow of millions of dollars into their own pockets or their own organizations or for their own benefit. They're masters at it. Actually, the masterful part is their amazing ability to avoid ever, ever being held accountable.
It's Friday, April 27th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We have Rabbi Lapin with us. The one, the only, Rabbi Lapin.
Glenn, your speech last night went down so very well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. We were gathered to celebrate Israel's 70th birthday. I was afraid, Rabbi Lapin, that, you know, I'm never one to bring to a birthday party. You know, I'm not the life of the party. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I had to be, the speech was in our studios, and I was supposed to be there last night, but I'm being held captive here in Los Angeles. And so I couldn't read the audience because I couldn't see them or hear them. I'm glad that nobody was, you know, running for the doors after my speech.
No, not at all. It really made the evening.
Rabbi, before we get into some other things, and I want to talk about your speech because I learned so much history yesterday, as I always do from you.
Thank you.
Can we talk a little bit about the content of what I spoke about last night, about the 12th Imam and about what Iran is doing in surrounding Israel and how this looks like it's all kind of culminating around the anniversary and President Trump's visit of May 14th?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are people really aware of what Iran truly believes and what their motivation is for all of this?
Well, you know, going back a long time back, there was a guy called Pat Buchanan. I'm sure you remember.
Yeah.
And Pat Buchanan wrote a piece. I think it was published in the American Conservative back then. But basically what he said was in the aftermath of 9/11, he pointed out that what he called neoconservatives, which many people felt was a code word for Jewish conservatives, were pushing President George W. Bush to sort of nation build in the Middle East, which was sort of part of the dream of it. Anyway, it caused a tremendous row, and many people felt that President Bush was sort of following the guidance, because many of the people like Paul Wolfowitz Pearl and many of those people who had the president's ear were part of what Pat Buchanan called the sort of neocon crowd, people who read Commentary magazine and the Weekly Standard, etc., etc. And at any rate, the fact is that at the end of the day, when we all look back on that period, we ask whether the enormous expenditure of blood and money on the wars in Iraq and so on, were they really worth it for America? And I don't think so, because at the time I said that trying to turn a suburb of Baghdad or Damascus into a suburb of Kansas City is just not going to work, because culture beats politics. Politics flows from culture, not the other way around. And since the pleasant and genteel surroundings, you know, of a suburb in Dallas or Kansas City or Charlotte, these are the result of hundreds of years of American culture built on hundreds of other years of British culture. And so the notion, anyway, the point is that a fair disservice was done by that period, because today, whenever we speak about the very real threats posed by Iran, which you have been one of the few voices doing eloquently and effectively, the reaction on the part of a lot of people is, oh, you know what, we don't need any more wars in the Middle East. George Bush did enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, they're completely different. In my personal view, I do think that much of what George Bush spent and expended in blood and money was a waste, because Iraq is no better today than it was on 9/11.
And we may have, lost the opportunity to now make a strong case for real, true evil. That is, and I don't use that word. Yes, yes. I don't use the word evil lightly, but I do believe they are in an end times game. Those who believe in the 12th Imam, and they are talking about it right now. Their leadership in the Republican Guard are talking about the return of the 12th Imam, and the chaos that they are causing, and they are orchestrating now the Palestinians on the Gaza border of Israel, and you know, that's only going to get worse, especially when the president opens up the new the embassy there in Jerusalem.
And God bless him for that, my goodness. And also, I mean, for pardoning Scooter Libby, that took some guts. That's something George W. Bush should have done, but didn't.
Rabbi, last night you gave a speech and you talked about why Israel, or why Jerusalem is so important, or what it was built on. And you gave a little bit of history of the Middle East and Yemen and Somalia. I had never heard any of this before. Start quickly with just the... Is it already 20 after? Oh, my gosh. Hang on. Yeah, let me take a quick break, and then we'll come back. You have to tell this story. I've never heard this history, and it really puts things into perspective. We'll do that here in a second. Thought my clock was wrong. All right, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. If you want your home sold on time and for the most amount of money, right now is the time to sell your house. If you're thinking about it, just contact realestateagentsitrust.com. They're gonna find the best real estate agent in your area, the one who is just like you. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. They share your values. But they're also hand-picked and fully vetted for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record in your area. It's crucial that you have somebody who is the best in your area. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test, and the results are remarkable, and you can find out yourself why and how things are working out really well for people who are going to realestateagentsitrust.com. If you're moving to another area, if you're trying to sell your parents' house, or you're just want to sell your house or buy a new one, you need the people that will make that happen the easiest and the quickest way, the most painless way, and somebody who's going to make the most amount of money for you. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You spend any time reading or listening to Rabbi Daniel Lappin, and I guarantee you, you will learn more from him than anybody else, usually anybody else that you've ever met. RabbiDanielLappin.com, RabbiDanielLappin.com. Rabbi, tell me quickly about the reason Israel is different and how it has affected the Middle East.
Yeah, sure. Although... not to sound sycophantic or anything, but I'm always astounded by you. 99 out of 100 celebrities who had to do their speech remote by satellite, as you did last night, you'd have done your speech and then taken off. In any event, you were in a time zone where it was inconvenient, and I can't believe, in the last few minutes, I'm trying to wrap myself around the idea that you stayed online and heard my speech coming off the
Rabbi, I would not miss your speech. I mean what I just said. I've learned more from you than I've learned from most people. I think you are one of the brightest, most well-spoken history teachers and theology teachers I've ever encountered.
Well, thank you very much indeed. But I'm astounded that you stayed online to listen to what went on. But okay, to answer your question, I pointed out that I saw speaking about Mombasa, which is a city I used to know on the east coast of Africa, from which trading ships 3,000 years ago used to travel up the east coast of Africa, and then they would turn into the Red Sea and then go up to the southern tip of Israel, which is now Eilat. And there were copper mines there, but there were all kinds of, basically Israel was the center of the world in those days. I mean, although there were obviously civilizations elsewhere, Israel was where it's at. And I pointed out that ships that would go up, I mean, so far spread was Israeli culture that to this day, Somalia and Yemen, which are on either side of the straits as you enter the Red Sea, were named by people after the Hebrew words for left and right. As you're heading up north, Somalia is on the left, and the Hebrew word for left is Somal, and Yemen is on the right, and of course the Hebrew word for right is Yemen. So...
I mean, think of that. And the patriarchy continues. You're naming countries, whole lands. I had no idea. That's left, that's right. In Hebrew.
Yeah, right.
Do they know that?
I mean, Somalia has raised a barbaric piracy to obscene new levels. So I'm not sure they're spending an awful lot of time delving into the demographics and study of their language and culture. But I mean, yeah, it's known by people who know these things. And and then I pointed out that, you know, I listed a number of cities after speaking of Mombasa. I said there's Naples, there's Oslo, there's Paris, there's Quebec City, there's Rome, there's Stockholm, there's Tokyo. And I was sort of playing around with, you know, choosing an alphabetical list of cities. But the main point was that all these cities are in water. And it's very hard to think of a significant city that's more than 200 years old that wasn't built on water.
Had to be.
The city that has shaped the destiny of Western civilization for never mind 200 years, but 2,000 years is Jerusalem, which is almost unique in
not on the water at all.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
We all have ears, but I don't think a lot of us know what to do with them. Ears help us hear. They help us communicate. They're vital to the human civilization we've been able to come up with. But we don't actually treat them all that well now, do we? You know, hey, you need to clean the inside of your ear. Well, let's use this cardboard stick with a little bit of fuzz on the end of it. That's a Q-tip. That's a terrible idea. You need something that's actually going to condition your ears, that's going to help you with that. When your ears aren't clean, they can get uncomfortable. They're itch. They can get plugged up. They're kind of nasty. And you need to make sure that they're clean with the right tools. Wax RX is the right tool. Use waxrx.com is the place to go to get it. It comes with everything you need to clean out your ears safely and condition them as well. Go to usewaxrx.com. You'll order your reusable ear wash system there, and they're going to hook you up with free shipping if you use the offer code radio. Usewaxrx.com, offer code radio.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Dave Rubin coming up in just a few minutes. We're so glad that you're here. Sam Power is back in the news. Love her. Sam Power is, what's his name? What's her husband? Cass Sunstein's wife. She was also the one who brought us the, you know, really good Libyan and Syria council.
Yeah, the former U.S. ambassador as well.
Yeah.
To the U.N.
Yeah, she was wonderful. She was really wonderful. Did you see that Nikki Haley is now the most popular politician in America?
She's had a great run here. She's had a great run.
There have been three, I think, outrageously great UN ambassadors in my lifetime. Jean Kirkpatrick, John Bolton, and now Nikki Haley.
You forgot Sam Power, though, of course. Obviously, you meant to include her
in
this group.
No, I really didn't forget. But here she is on Barack Obama's red line.
In retrospect, I wish we hadn't gone to Congress with in the red line moment when we had already committed to using force. You know, I think that was actually a really pivotal moment where we knew prior to that point that many of Obama's critics were not at the level. You know, that things they were for on a Monday, if Obama was for them on a Tuesday, they were then against them on a Wednesday. Like, we knew that, and yet that decision to go to Congress was made, and a lot of people don't believe this, but in good faith, in believing that given the number of people who, in response to this monstrous attack on 1,500 people, including several hundred kids, so many people had come out kind of calling for the president to act, you know, criticizing him for being feckless, and then the president turned around and said, okay, here, this is what I want to do. Now we can do this together. And they basically, you know, kind of, you know, ran for the exits.
She is right on that last part. I mean, you should go to Congress with these things.
But that is constitutional. Her surprise that Congress would be spineless is is hard to believe. And she's an educated woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she should have known. You know, so. I think this happens, though, at times. I think the same thing kind of happened with Trump and Comey. You know, at the time, everyone was calling for his firing. You know, the left and the right both didn't like him. And they were all calling. The left was on the front lines for calling for him to be fired. And as soon as he fired him, I think Trump fired Comey with the idea that, generally speaking, it would be well received. Because so many people were out there saying he should be fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so Trump fires him, and then they immediately turn their opinion around to the exact opposite and then started criticizing him for it, which, you know, I mean, at some level, they perhaps should have seen that coming. But I think that does happen with administrations. They may have gone into the Syria thing thinking they could get that through Congress, and they didn't. But when you don't, you have to understand, A, there's consequences to that, and B, you don't just go do it anyway. And I think every president seems to have forgotten that lesson.
Let's see. I've got more audio, but there's also...
I have an important story.
I do, too. I'll give you mine real quick. And
sure.
Then you can go, okay? Mm-hmm. Florida police have made a traffic stop. They stopped. There are two passengers in the car. They were swerving in the roadway. They were stopped by Fort Pierce police. As they approached the vehicle, they smelled marijuana. Well, they said, step out of the car, and they searched the car, and they found cocaine and marijuana in separate bags inside of a purse that one of the women had on their lap. The police said, you know, what about the cocaine? And she said, quote, I don't know anything about any cocaine, but it is a windy day, officer. I believe it must have flown through the window and into my purse. Apparently, the police didn't buy that, and she's in jail today.
So the weather is her fault? No, the weather is her fault. She can now control the wind.
I don't think that's exactly what happened there.
I like this story, Glenn, because this is something I think you and I can unite on. There's a Texas town that is holding a 5K. Towns do this all the time. You know, they have these little 5Ks. You go run at them. You know, you have it's like camaraderie of your community. Maybe you have a snack afterwards and you know, refreshments. It's a nice way, I think, towns can build, you know, some community spirit and some camaraderie.
No, it is nothing but a communist or European scheme to get us all to adopt the metric system. That is the primary reason I don't run in 5Ks.
Really?
I want you to know.
Oh, really? Because I thought that the reason might be, you know, you'd have to run 5K.
No, I said that it was the primary reason. I refuse to adopt the metric system. That's my primary reason. My second is I am in such a highly tuned physical shape.
Yeah.
That I think 5K is a little too much.
Maybe a little bit.
Because
I think these events are actually kind of fun, with the exception of all that running. You know, my wife runs them a lot, and I have been able to partake in these events, which is it winds up just being just the refreshments. You know, you're kind of out and you have a bunch of refreshments, which I like it. But they're actually solving this a little bit in Texas. Instead of a 5K, they're having a 0.5K.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm interested.
Yes. The running, the entire distance of the race is 1,640 feet.
That's fantastic.
I love it. Now, what you will get when you're there is, of course, beer. You will get a pint at the start of the race, which is...
Do you have somebody just jam it into your hand halfway through the race, too?
It feels like it's like one of those marathon people who get it from... I like that. And then also, you will get a pretentious 0.5K sticker to put on your windshield.
Oh, I want one.
I want one of those. Badly.
Oh, I've got to have it. I must have the 0.5K. Oh, I hate those people that have those on their... I want one. I need a 0.5K.
I would even run a 0.10K. I'd do it.
Which is smaller than a... I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you. All right. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It's Casper. The idea of falling into bed at night has taken a whole new meaning since I started sleeping on my Casper bed. Have you ever gotten to the point to where you almost hate the idea of bedtime because you know you're just not going to go to sleep? And you just look at your bed and you're like, oh, geez, I'm so tired, but I know I'm just going to lay in bed and it's going to be another nightmare all night. That is what's changed now that I have a Casper mattress. The engineers at Casper have outdone themselves. They have exceptionally comfortable beds, the best sleep experience you can find. And you will find why it's not only my favorite mattress, but it will be yours as well. They have three unique mattresses that help you sleep cool and comfortable year-round. The Wave mattress, remarkable technology that is built right into it, and it will relieve 36 different pressure points. So find your Casper mattress now. Try it out in your own home for 100 nights risk-free. Risk-free Casper mattress. Try it for 100 nights at Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck and save $50 on the purchase of your mattress. That's Casper.com. Promo code Beck and save $50. Terms and conditions do apply. See site for details. Dave Rubin is up next.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I had a really fascinating conversation with Dave Rubin the other day here in Los Angeles, and I asked him, you know, how did the change happen? Because he's a guy who said, I used to be progressive. A year ago, he proudly proclaimed himself as progressive. Now, not so much. I asked him, did you know what the word progressive really meant then?
I thought they were the good guys. That was kind of the extent of it. Like, things are going to be better because they say nice things about people. I mean, I wish I could give you a better answer to that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I think that's where most people are until they find themselves in a point to where the pain one way or another of what they're doing. I think we're fortunate because we have to have an opinion.
Yeah.
And most people don't. And so they just kind of go along. But because we have to have an opinion, hopefully, we look at everything we say at the end of the day and go, was that really right?
Yeah. And the real beauty of that, of course, is that the more you do it and the more years that go by, the rubber keeps meeting the road in different ways. So suddenly you go, wait a minute. I thought this about this, but if I want to really be intellectually consistent, I'm going to have to reevaluate that. And that's why I find that. Thank you.
I took the same thing. I realized I didn't know anything on my own. I didn't know anything on my own. Took everything out and said, I don't believe in anything. I am not pro or against anything. Started reading, started really doing my own homework. And then I put it in. I go, okay, I got it. And then when I'd put another thing in that I thought I believed, if they were in conflict, wait a minute, one of these is wrong. You know what I mean?
And how great to get in there and do that.
Your life becomes, I mean, it's 5 years at least of total hell.
Yeah.
You know, the truth will set you free.
I'm
but
about three and a half in right now. Yeah. Okay.
Truth will set you free, but it'll make you miserable first.
Yeah.
But you then, once that all pulls into place, you have an easy time answering new questions.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, well, okay, well, it fits. And you just recognize it.
Yeah. What's nice also, real quick, is that you will find that you will be a better person.
Yes.
I am a better person now. I'm not a perfect person, and I still sometimes fall into some old traps and have old habits and all of that. But if you really start understanding this stuff and you understand why you think the way you do, you will try your damn hardest.
Yeah.
And we're all flawed, but you will try your damn hardest not to do those things.
Yeah.
So I think as I sit here at the moment, I'm the best person that I've been. I hopefully will be a much better person. I really do, or a more refined person, or whatever that is. But I am trying. I can tell you, I've never tried harder in my life to live up to the things that I'm talking
about.
That's
great.
Yeah, no, it's really cool.
It's great.
Yeah.
So, have you gotten to a place to where there's a book that I read years ago called "Blackmailed by History," and it was about McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I got it. McCarthy, bad guy, the whole blacklisting thing. Started reading it, and it's all very well footnoted. And I started reading it, and I closed it because I thought, if I go any further in this book, if I'm going to be intellectually honest, it's going to change my opinion on all of these things. Do I want to even take that on at this point? Okay. And I decided I'm going to call and do my research on the author first, and then I want to call him, and I want to poke holes in him to see if he's a sound individual before I finish the book. I finished the book, and it changed. It changed a lot of what I believed. I believed in that, oh, America, and you know, the government, all that crap, you know what I mean? Have you gotten to that place yet? Have you gotten to a place to where you thought, I don't know if I'm ready to look at that yet. I don't know if I have you had any of those?
I don't know that I've gotten to places where it's that I'm afraid to look, because I've been looking and I have difficult conversations on my show every week. And so, for example, I think one that we differ on is I describe myself as begrudgingly pro-choice. I think it's a horrible decision that a woman would have to make.
I was pro-choice.
I get it, believe me.
And then begrudgingly pro-choice.
Believe me, all my conservative friends say this. I was there. So now knowing that I respect you guys, and I know and that you guys generally have clean way of thinking and all that, I have to see that. That thing that caused you to close the book, I have to see that. And, you know, when I had Ben Shapiro on my show and he was making the pro-life argument, I was making the pro-choice argument. And my argument is nuanced, and I talk about 20 weeks and because the fetus can then feel pain. But I acknowledge at the same time, I'm acknowledging if you're saying it's a life at 20, it's obviously a life at 18. I get the inconsistencies there. And my deference still goes to the woman who's here and now. But we can do this again, and I know we will.
Yeah, look, I am the one place that I know I'm inconsistent on is abortion. Because I make the exception for rape and incest, and I shouldn't if I were going to be consistent. But I can't. I just can't do it.
Right. But even the fact that you're acknowledging that shows that if you sat down here with the clearest pro-life thinker, they could probably get you there because you're already acknowledging the inconsistency. Now, that little inconsistency, what you believe as your personal humanity may override that logical inconsistency. But we all live in that place. And that's why the media is so insane right now, where they say if you're pro-life, you hate women. And if you're pro-choice, you hate children.
Right.
And it's like, no, you're all liars and frauds.
Yes.
What is real is what is in your mind. And if you a believer in a higher power, how you operate within that.
What is frustrating to me, I can sit down with anybody as long as they're honest and they can say what you just did. Look, I know it's inconsistent. And I just said, I know it's inconsistent.
We just conceded something. I mean, both of us from a different place.
Yeah. And that's a good, healthy place. That is a country I can live in.
Yeah.
Where I can't live is when somebody says, I'm pro-choice all the way to the end. Well, isn't that a child that
what are we talking about? Like 7 months?
I mean, even partial birth abortion. Yeah. You know it's a child. You have to abort in the birth canal, because the moment it comes out, it's illegal, it's a murder. Come on. And, you know, where you will have politicians who will say, I won't answer the question if my children were life, you know, and children before they were born. Come on.
But Glenn, think about what we just did right here in these 3 minutes, and this simply does not happen. We just agreed to disagree. We both admitted inconsistencies yes. in our own logic. This simply does not happen on the left. And if it does, please, anyone that's watching this, send me the people, and I will invite them, and most likely I have invited them, because
yep.
I invite these people all yep. the time. But what I want, I'm not just going to have any crackpot that's just screaming all day long. What I want is people that truly have
yes.
a consistent set of views, even if those are completely Correct. Antithetical to everything Correct. Else that I've been.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.